Okay, we ready?
Ready.
Tonight's shiur is going to be from this sefer, which is called the B'nai Yisaschor. And it is pronounced that way, Yisaschor, even though usually that name is pronounced Yisachor. And this was written by Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinev. He lived in the late 1700s and into the 1800s. Passed away in 1841. And he was a Talmud, he was the student of the Chozah of Lublin. If you recall from previous times, the Chozah of Lublin was one of the great students of the Magid of Mezrich, who was the leader of Hasidus after the Baal Shem Tov. What's very unique about the B'nai Yisaschor is really his approach to how he writes this book. Most Sifrei Hasidus follow the weekly Torah portion, and they take a remez, an idea, a hint, and they take a pasuk to begin to elaborate on concepts in Hasidus. That's how most of them are written. What he did was he went through the whole Jewish calendar, and over the course of his book, he writes about all of the Yom Tovim, the special qualities of each Jewish month, and where those qualities come from, and he ties together a lot of ideas from many different places. In more contemporary writings, I'm sure you are familiar with the Sefer HaTodah, the Book of Our Heritage by Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov. So that was the approach he took. He went through the whole 12 months of the year and then wrote accordingly. The Nevei Yisaschor followed that mahalach, that approach. So what we're learning from is his section on the month of Adar, Chodesh Adar, it's the month that we're in now, and the month in which Purim falls out. This particular mimer is going to tie together ideas that seemingly are different and unrelated. That would be great. Thank you. You can hear it in my voice, right? I do have a cold. Thank you. Thank you very much, Neil. There's going to be some ideas here that are that don't seem to be on the surface related to each other, and over the course of the mimer, he's going to connect them and will come out with a very beautiful, beautiful concept. Hi, how are you? How you doing? Okay, so it starts right here where it says Mimer Dalet on your page. Mimer Dalet. And we will drop down about four lines from there to the letter Aleph. Alkein karu layomim ho'ele purim al shem ha-pur. This is a quote from the Megillah. Therefore they called these days Purim, for the name of the pur, the lots which Haman drew. Meharo'i lasei slave. So he says it is worthy of our attention. Manishtana kriya shem ha-moed hazeh. Why is the calling of the name of Purim different? Min kol hashemos shel kol hamoadim, from the way other Jewish holidays are called by their name. What does he mean? Shehashemos shel kol hamoadim nikroim al shel hanes. Because if you look at the names of the Yom Tovim, the Jewish holidays, they're really named after a miracle, a type of salvation, a Yeshua, that happened for the Jewish people. Haynu, for example, Chag HaPesach, Pesach, Al Shem HaPesicha VaHadilug, that God skipped over the homes of the Jewish people when he smote the firstborns of the Egyptians. So we were delivered, we were saved. V'chein HaShem HaNikra B'Torah Chag HaMatzos, or as Pesach is called in the Torah, Chag HaMatzos, the holiday of Matzos, Al Shelo Hispik Batzekes Shel Avosenu, because we were leaving Mitzrayim so quickly that the dough didn't have time to rise. So again, that has to do with being saved, with the Yeshua, etc. V'chein hu meharoi, I'm sorry, I skipped a line. V'ochlu matzos, chag ha-sukos, ki ba-sukos o shavti es b'nei Yisrael. The holiday of Sukkos, because when Hashem led us through the Midbar, the wilderness, He had us dwell in Sukkos, which were the Anani HaKavo, the clouds of glory. Those are protective things that Hashem used to help the Jewish people. V'chein hu meharoi sheyihiye hamoed nikra Hashem ha'yeshua v'hanes. So it's just only fitting, really, that a Yom Tov should be called by after the name of the miracle that was done on that Yom Tov. V'lo Hashem ha'shibud v'ha'yisurin v'ha'tzora l'sonei Yisrael. It shouldn't be called by the attempt at afflicting and causing suffering to the Jewish people. Ubekan v'tehi lehepech. And here, when it comes to Purim, it's just the other way around. Koru shem hamoed Purim, ashem hapur, asher hi pil Haman. They call Purim after lots, which Haman drew to try and do what?
Destroy it.
Kill the Jewish people. So it's unusual that the name of the holiday is after the method he used to try and destroy us. Very different. Hu hagoro, those were the lots, the lots that Haman drew, lahara li Yisroel, to try and harm the Jewish people. Right, so that is his question, and from there he's going to go off in a few different directions to bring an answer to this question. Vehine, ayin v'maimer aleph. Take a look at what we said earlier. Simen tes yud ayin sham remez divrei chazal. I'm going to skip a line there. I'm just going to read through it because it doesn't pertain to this. Harod says sheyiskaimu nechasav yita bohen ador. Okay, well, now we'll pick up from there. The Nisparesh Shem. We have spoken about earlier, Alpi Hakdomas Moron HaArizal, based on something that the Ari HaKadosh said, Rav Yitzchak Luria, and he said, Diber Bekadcho, in his holy words, Kol HaChadoshim Heim BiBechinas Evorei HaRosh, that all the Jewish months, correspond to part of the head of a person. I'm right here. It's a little hard to follow. That's where I am.
Mm.
Okay. About four lines up. All the Jewish months correspond to something on the head of a person. He's going to describe a couple of them. Tishrei, the month of Tishrei, where Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur come out, that's Gulgolas. That's the skull of a person. Mar Cheshvan and Kislev, the two next months, Cheshvan and Kislev, Beis Oznayim, they correspond to the two ears a person has. Teves Shvat, Beis Einayim. Teves and Shvat are the two eyes that people have. And Adar, Bechinas HaChotem. Adar, which is the month that we're talking about, is the Chotem, which means the nose. Chotem is a word for af. Af means nose. So that's one idea we want to keep in our mind for a moment that he's going to elaborate on. That Ador corresponds to Chotem, which means the nose. And he's drawing on the writings of the Arizal to teach us this. So what's the connection there? The connection is this. Bo tolui chush hareach. Does anybody know what the chush hareach is? What does that mean? The sense of smell. All right. So the sense of smell is dependent upon the nose. That's where we have our olfactory sense. Vehine. So why is that important? Very important concept he's going to bring here, brought down in many sephora. Kol hachushim niskoren etzel chet adam harishon. If you look in the Torah, when Adam and Chava eat from the tree of knowledge, from the Eitz Hadas, you'll find that all of the senses of people are mentioned, except for which one? What do you think? The sense of smell. Ma she'en kein chush hareach lo nizkar. The sense of smell is not mentioned there. It mentions touch, it mentions taste, she sees the tree, but it does not mention the sense of smell. Okay, and therefore, kulam nispagmu the nisgashmu, up on the next column now, all of the senses of a person received a certain kind of defect. Oh, fine, I didn't want you to have to put that up. No, I thought it was just a quick thing. Forget about it, I don't want you to miss the whole thing here. All of the senses of a person were defected. We got some kind of a flaw as a result of the chet of Adam and Gan Eden. Masha ein kein chush hareach, which is not the case with the sense of smell. Because the sense of smell is not mentioned there, right, we understand it was not defected in the same way that the other senses were.
I see.
Hu davar sheha neshama nehena mimenu velo haguf. This is something the Gemara says, that the soul, the neshama, benefits directly from the sense of smell, as opposed to the body. So it goes right to the sense of, what's that?
That's why at the Avdallah we smell.
That's exactly right. That's the reason why at Havdalah, when we're comforting our soul because we lost our neshama yisera, our extra soul, that's why we do that with the sense of smell, because it goes straight through to our neshama, and that's a comfort for our neshama. All right, so let's just do a little recap here. Number one, the question. Purim, an unusual name. It should, a holiday should follow the name of the Nes or the Yeshua. And Purim seems to follow that which Haman tried to inflict harm upon the Jewish people. That's the question. Then the month of Adar, he says, corresponds to the nose. That's from the Arizal. And in the nose is totally dependent the sense of smell. And the sense of smell was not defected in Gan Eden along with the other ones at the time of the eating from the Eitz Hadas. So we're starting to build our chain of thought here. And this is his derech. He's going to string together several ideas. When you kind of get to the end, you go, oh, that kind of thing.
So
in the middle, it's a little bit dark. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I got here late. Who are we talking about?
This is the B'nai Yisoschar, Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinev. 19th century Talmud of the Choza of Lublin.
Okay.
And I did not mention this, but in our times, the Bluzhever Hasidim are descendants from Dinov, amongst others. Okay. Alkain, therefore, now he adds another interesting thought here. Zeh hachush, it is this sense, the sense of smell. Yinosein lemelech hamashiach, which the Mashiach will have in very refined measure when he comes. As it says, this is the Pasuk, Veheiricho b'yiras Hashem. He will have the fragrance of the fear of God. That means to say, he'll be able to smell the difference between Tov and Ra, between good and evil. It says that about the Mashiach. Ulezeh hachush Nikra koach hamiskayim. Okay, next step. This sense of smell is called koach hamiskayim, which means it endures. It's an enduring sense. Yoser mikol hachushi, more so than all the other senses. Kevon shelo nehene kol kach micheit adam harishon. Because it did not have the same benefit from the chet of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, so therefore it's not subject to death and deterioration like the other senses are, and therefore it has more kiyum, it has more sustenance, it has a more enduring quality. Sha'al yidei chet Adam harishon nolad ha-hefsed le-nivroin, as we know, as a result of the chet, hefsed, which means deterioration, death, that's what came into the world as a result of that chet, because it says there in the Torah, ki biyom acholcha mimenu mos tamus, on the day that you eat from that tree of knowledge, you shall surely die. That means man becomes mortal.
Mm-hmm.
So eating from that tree introduced mortality into the world, and not just that the concept of death became part of the world itself, mortality, but everything was now affected by the reality of Misa, of death, which involves decline, it involves deterioration. That's sickness. All of those things are related to Misa. So in this respect, everything was affected by that, but because the sense of smell was not affected in the same way, mm-hmm, it has this enduring type quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
Ma she'en ken ze hachush nikra lo biyoser koach hamiskayim. This sense of smell is enduring. Ayin sham b'divreinu, look there at what we wrote. He's just referring us to a different place. Okay, so now in our steps. Ador, sense of smell not defected by the chet, which means to say not defected in the same way. Sense of smell is unique in that respect. It's the koach hamiskayim. It has an enduring quality to it, and it's not subject to the influences of mortality and decline the same way that the other senses are. So that's the first part of this binyan, of this structure. Okay? Please.
How do the other senses relate to the neshama?
It would be more so through the body, that there's a less direct path from the sense of sight and taste, that they're really going to the goof, and in that respect they go through there to the soul, because the body and the soul are connected. But when it comes to the sense of smell, then that is a more direct path to the neshama. A medical person once told me that the sense of smell goes straight to the brain, that there's no interruption. It's just a straight shot to the brain. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody here, but a person familiar with that told me that. Yeah, please, Lewis.
Are you saying that the neshama, when a person dies, that the neshama maintains a sense of smell?
I don't know if we would say that or not. Now, on the one hand, all of the senses are contained in the neshama in a spiritual way.
Right.
Because the neshama sees. It's just that it sees spiritually. The neshama hears. So it has the same senses as our body has, except in a different plane, in a different context.
Mm-hmm.
In that respect, it has all of the senses when it leaves the body on its higher plane. So I think there's not a distinction, really. Once the neshama leaves the body, then all of those things that it has intrinsically, it retains. And now it's not hampered by the body anymore. Okay. I think that's the idea.
Yeah, I was putting it in a physical...
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions till this point? Okay. Let's go a little further. Next idea. Now we are, in case you're able to follow, this one's a little harder to follow than earlier, Myra. We're right here on the left side of the page, second paragraph. Is it a little warm in here? I'm feeling kind of it is.
It's nice.
It's okay? Okay. See, once you talk about the temperature, then you start messing with people like, I'm cold, I'm hot, like, okay.
Forget it.
If anybody is feeling warm, feel free, but otherwise I'll leave it as it is.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, ubezeh tisponein miflaos tamim deim. He says, now from here we can reflect upon the wondrous things of God. Tamim deim means the one who is of perfect knowledge. That's Hashem. Hine, Haman harasha hatsor hatsorer. Haman, the wicked one, the enemy of the Jewish people. Hoya kocho min hanochash hakadmoni. His power came from the Nachash, the snake, in Gan Eden.
Mm-hmm.
That means to say he is the embodiment of evil in the world. Haman is. That's Amalek, the nation of Amalek, whose sole goal in life is to destroy the Jewish people. Amalek is parallel to the snake, the Nachash, in Gan Eden. So what happened there with that Nachash, with that serpent? Asher pito le'echol min eitz hadas. That nachash persuaded Chava to eat from the tree of knowledge. Kein hu goram ba'atzasa. So too, Haman, with his wicked plan, he caused sheyochlu Yisroel misu'udaso shel Achashverosh. That the Jewish people would eat from Achashverosh's feast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the main things that the Jewish people became responsible for there, and they received the death penalty in Shemaim, was for partaking of Achashverosh's Suda. So it looks like it's Ahasuerus' plan. He's celebrating the fact that he thinks the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be rebuilt. He dresses himself up in the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. The Midrash teaches that. Takes out the kelim from the Beis HaMikdash. It's an incredible bazillion. It's a disgrace for our people. And then we went and we partook at that of that feast. Mm-hmm. So what happened at that feast when the Jews ate there? V'nischaivu sonehem shel Yisroel. That's a euphemism. It means the enemies of the Jewish people became chayiv misa, liable to death penalty. It means the Jewish people, the Jewish people. We became chayiv misa. We, at that point, received in heaven a death sentence. So up in Shemayim, when we partook of that feast of Ahasuerus, that was parallel to the Nachash, the snake in Gan Eden, persuading Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas. Mm-hmm. That whole event resurfaces later on in history here. And now Haman, who is parallel to the Nachash, persuades them to eat through Ahasuerus at his feast, and we become Chayev Misa, just like Adam and Chava did. So history is repeating itself in a different form and in a different context, which, if we pay attention to our Sephorim, we see happens a lot over the course of Jewish history. We repeat certain things, certain patterns. Mm-hmm. They rise and they fall within a different context than when they occurred originally. Like, for example, on the positive side, Purim is called Matan Torah. It's a type of receiving of the Torah again. Mm-hmm. We were Mekabel Torah at Purim. It's like a miniature Har Sinai in much different clothing, right? Completely different format. We received the Torah. We accepted it upon us at that time. So here we have a reenactment or a parallel of the chet of Adam and Chav in Gan Eden. And because of that, we became Chayiv Misa, as he says. Kimavur bekisvei ha'arizal. This concept comes from the Arizal, that this was what was happening there beneath the surface. Shehis orer chet Adam Harishon, that the chet of Adam Harishon was reawakened in creation at this time. It resurfaced. The Niknas Aleihem Misa, we became Chayiv Misa, we got the death penalty in Shemayim. Kamo al Adam Harishon ba'achlo min Eitz Hadas, just as happened to Adam when he ate from the tree of knowledge. Right, so now we see what's going on here, that yes, Haman is Amalek and he is making a decree to destroy the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. But that corresponds to something that's happening spiritually to the Jewish people. We're spiritually under a death decree in Shemayim because of what we did. V'hine, po'al v'asa hayotzer kol hu elokeinu. So Hashem, who is orchestrating all of these events, because we know that's one of the main themes of the Megillah. Thank you very much.
Sorry, it took so long.
It's okay.
Is the pot still warm?
Shackle on the other world. Thanks a lot. That's Mesiris Nefesh. No. Beats Hafesh Berush Vesuda, hands down.
Right, exactly.
I'm just going to take 1 minute, take a little break here. It's getting a little heavy anyway, so it's nice to take a little break. All that talk about the Eitz Hadas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so now, Hashem, who is orchestrating all of these events, what did he do? Asher Haman, I'm sorry, we're about 15 lines down on the left column, where it says, Ki, Asher, no, one second. Asher Haman Harasha. That Haman the Rasha, the wicked man, he pil pur la'abed. So what did Haman decide to do, seemingly of his own accord, to try to destroy the Jews? What was his method? What was his method when he came up with the date?
The lots.
The lots, right. Kipil Pur. So he threw lots, he drew lots, he did some kind of a lottery, and it came out in the month of Adar, this month that we're in. V'lo matza l'gorolo rak chodesh Adar. And his gorol, his lots, came out in this month. And what is special about this month?
The sense of smell.
Right. V'chinas ha-chotem, the nose. Asher bo chush ha-reach, which has the sense of smell. V'hu chush ha-miskayin, and that is the sense which endures and therefore is above death. So Haman's lots come out to the Jewish people in the one month that they are invulnerable, mm-hmm. where they're above death. Because the chush ha-reach, the sense of smell, corresponds to this month, which did not receive the same misa-like qualities as the other senses. Kilo nifkam b'chet adam harishon, because the sense of smell was not defected. Al kein timsa asher gam shemos hagoalim. We'll also find that the name of the redeemers, Mordechai and Esther, they also have to do with the sense of smell. Nikra'im b'shem b'samim. B'samim is fragrant things. Hanivra'im l'chush hareach, which were created by God in the service of the sense of smell. Hainu Mordechai. Okay, so Mordechai is Mor Doror. In Aramaic, Mordechai, Meria Dachia. In the Torah, when they describe the spices that they're using to compose fragrant items, it says Mor Doror, which is pure myrrh, and the Aramaic for that is Meria Dachia, which sounds exactly like Mordechai. So Mordechai represents a very fragrant spice. Esther is Hadassah. Right? Hadassah are myrtles. You recognize them from your lulav and esrog. Have you ever smelled your Hadassah after Pesach, after Sukkot? Sorry, they smell wonderful, very fragrant leaf. So Esther also contains within her a name that's related to the sense of smell. Okay, now what's he saying here? He's not just saying that, isn't that interesting? They have in their names something which is also connected to the sense of smell.
Right.
He's saying that they were so great, Mordechai and Esther, that they also had reached a level that was similar to the level of a person who was not affected by the chet, by the transgression in Gan Eden, by the Yetz Hadas. Because a great tzaddik, a truly great person, can possibly reach the level of Adam and Chava before the chet, like Avraham Avinu did that. So he's saying that. It's not just that, wow, that's neat, those are their names. It's reflecting this quality within them, that they're also above Misa in a certain way. Yeah, Bev Abraham, please.
Would that also be suggesting that they were not present at the Su'udah?
They were not.
Correct. They did not partake. Mordechai didn't, Esther didn't. There were a few tzaddikim who did not partake of the Su'udah. Mordechai refused. Yeah. Okay, a little further. U'bezeh tovin al pi pshuto. I'm going to skip that part. We're going to go to another couple lines down. Hine, it's the last two lines of the second paragraph on the left side. Al yidei zeh shenofal hapur al Adar, because the pur, the lots, fell out in the month of Adar, nisbatel hatzar hatzorer, our enemy Haman was defeated, v'yisroel kayamim, and the Jewish people endure, la'ad, la'olam, forever and ever. So the poor, the lots, which Haman drew, were they a mechanism of destruction for the Jewish people or a mechanism of salvation for the Jewish people?
Salvation.
The latter. Right? So now he's answering his original question. Well, how come it's called Purim? Purim is the mechanism Haman used to try to destroy the Jews. That's what he thought he was doing. It's the mechanism that God used to force Haman's hands to draw lots so it would come out in the month of Adar to save the Jews. And therefore Purim is also a name which is associated with the Yeshua of the Jewish people, not the death of the Jewish people, not the destruction. Okay, so that's his line of thought. So let's take a look at it step by step. Okay, Adar represents which sense?
Smell.
Sense of smell. What's unique about the sense of smell?
Was not involved in the chait.
Not involved in the chait.
Right.
Therefore, it is above Misa in a certain way. It's above death in a certain way. It's Kaya. What does Haman represent? Who is he? He's the Nachash.
He's a snake.
And eating from Achashverosh Suda was parallel to what?
Adam eating from the tree of life.
The Neis Hadas. We became Chayiv Misa, just like he became Chayiv Misa. We're Chayiv Misa at that point. And Haman then draws lots, and it falls out in the month of Adar, which is the month where the Jewish people are above Misa. Now, that doesn't mean, right, that Chas V'Shalom, anything bad couldn't happen to us in the month of Adar. Of course, you know, anything could happen, Chas V'Shalom.
Right.
But Hashem is running the show here, and he's making it come out at a time where the Jewish people have excellent mazel, which is the month of Adar, to this day. This is a mazel dikah month for us, and it's above Misa. Okay, now that we know that, he's going to add one other really fascinating point. And we're in the last paragraph there, left side of the page, Ubazeh. Ubazeh, Tavin HaNe'amar B'Megillah B'Chodesh HaRishon. Now we can understand. It says that Haman drew lots in the first month. The first month is the month of Nisan. Hipil Pur Hu HaGorol Lifnei Haman. He cast lots, which is the Gorol, in front of Haman. He cast lots. Umei Chodesh L'Chodesh, and they kept going from month to month, from day to day. Shneim Asur Hu Chodesh Adar, until they came out on the month of Adar. Hine Lo Neda Perushan Shel HaDevorin. There's a question here. There's something we don't understand. Mi hu hamapil es hapur lifnei Haman. Who was the one who drew the lots? It doesn't say Haman hipil pur. Doesn't say Haman drew the lots. It says hipil pur. He did. Doesn't say who. Lifnei Haman. Before Haman. So halo Haman ba'atzma hu hamapil. Isn't Haman himself the one who's doing this? Isn't he the one throwing the lots? Ubaalei hapshat nidchaku ma'od bazeh. He said the Meforshim in the Megillah, the commentators, they have a lot of difficulty resolving this sentence. Who's doing it? Why doesn't it say Haman's doing it? Lefi divareinu yunach al pi divrei hazohar amrusham. He says we can explain this based on a premise which is discussed by the Zohar. And it says, kol makom sheneamar eze dover hana'aseh. If you have a place in Tanakh, and it's describing something which was done, something that was done, v'lo pirish mihu hapoel v'ha'osa, and it doesn't explicitly say who did it, it's anonymous, kagon ve'el Moshe Omar, for example, and to Moshe he said, alei el Hashem, go up to God, doesn't say who said it, hakavonahu al hahu desasim. It's always referring to the hidden one, Hamasabev Sibos, who's turning the wheels here and making all events happen. Ne'alam Benister, the one who is concealed within all. Memela, who is that? Hashem. Hashem's the one turning the wheels. So who's the Megillah referring to when it says, Hipil Pur, Hu Hagoro? Hashem. Hashem was the one who was moving Haman's hand to draw these lots. God was the one who was running the show here. Hipil Pur refers to God. Memela tefaresh gam bekan hipil pur hu hagoro lifnei Haman velo pirish mihu hamapil pur. Without explaining who's the one who cast it, hine hakavona hu hamisabev sibos. It's the one who is turning all events. Vahapoel yeshuos. The one who brings all salvation to the Jewish people. Hamagid Meresh Is Acharis, the one who says from the beginning that which is going to occur at the end. Hu Poal Va'asa, it's God. Lahapil Hagorol, to make this Gorol happen. Daiko Al Chodesh Adar, so it would fall out in the month of Adar. Hu Sod Hachotem, which represents the nose. Asher Bo Toloi Hu Shareach, which is the sense of smell. Hamiskayim Shalom Nispagim, which was not affected, kol kach be'etz hadas. Va'al yedei zeh, misbat le'atzas Haman, so Haman's plan was foiled. V'yisroel am karovo nisharu l'chaim u'l'shalom, and the Jewish people, God's special nation, remained for life and for shalom. Havein hadavar, understand this well, he says. Baruch hamafli plos, blessed is the one who does wondrous things, referring to Hashem. So you see, we got about 6, 7, 8 steps as he builds his theme and kind of takes us to the end. And at the end, it kind of looks like, oh yeah, right, it's sure. Well, we knew that. We knew that all along, right? It's almost that kind of thing. And it makes so much sense as he takes us through the journey of Hashem running the show here. So Haman will draw lots. It will come out on that month of sense of smell above Misa, and then the Jewish people are saved. So if you reflect back on it, you'll see there's about 7 or 8 steps that are woven together to bring us to that final point. Lev Avram, did you have a comment? Please.
Was the Arizal who said that the months correspond to the different parts of the hand?
Yes, that was the Arizal. And the Arizal was also brought in here. He was the one who said that the eating at Ahasuerus's Suda was parallel to the eating of the Eitz Hadas in Gan Eden, also from the Ari HaKadosh, yeah. So he drew on those principles. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of things that we understand about the month of Adar. The halacha tells us that if a Jewish person has a legal dispute with a Gentile, that you'd want to try and have that case adjudicated in the month of Adar. Because the mazel of the Jewish people is good in Adar. It's a time to settle a case if you had. And we have our own little Maisa Shohaya, going back many years, my wife and I, going back probably when we were first married around 30 years ago. So there was, my wife was in a certain school, and then she had to withdraw for different reasons, and they wouldn't give us our tuition money back. And it was a fairly expensive program. And she had called a couple of times to try and get, like, nothing doing. Like, the walls were forever, like, no way. So, Adar was drawing closer. It was about $1,100. Like, we're not talking millions of dollars, but for a young married couple, $1,100, not bad, right? You know?
30 years ago.
So, we called in the month of Adar. I remember the phone call. Called up, reached somebody in the office. We want to know if we could have this money refunded. My wife is true. Oh, yeah, of course. Of course you can have a refund. We'll make sure to send it to you right away. That's our Adar story. Right? After 3, 4 phone calls of literally stone walls, it was wide open. So everybody in their own way has their good mazel. That's our own little Adar story. Another thing also, which kind of comes clear in this mimer, is something we talked about in earlier shiurim, that time has qualities. We talked about Shabbos having qualities. So a Jewish month has qualities too. Every Jewish month has unique qualities. So tonight we talked about some of the special qualities of time of the month of Adar. That it somehow is above death in certain ways. That the mazel is strong for Jewish people. It's related to not transgressing in Gan Eden. And that means that those qualities resurface when this month comes back around in the Jewish calendar. You can tap into them. And then lastly is the idea, which is a very famous concept concerning the holiday of Purim, that God's hand is always operating in the world in a hidden way. And at a certain point of history, there were great miracles that God did for the Jewish people, at the time of open miracles, like when we left Egypt. But this time, from this point on in history, it's really more so God's hidden hand within the events of the world. Because if you were to step back and take a look at the Megillah, it's just day-to-day events that are occurring. But when you see the whole story being played out, God's hand was there all along so the Jewish people would be saved. That's one of the reasons given for why God's name is not written in the Megillah, because he's operating behind the scenes. So you won't find his name written in the Megillah. Just in that we touched on that, I want to share with you a very interesting Ibn Ezra, not directly related to this, but I saw it recently, and it kind of intrigued me. On the same topic, which many commentators write about, why Hashem did not have his name in the Megillah, why that's the case. So the Ibn Ezra wrote that the letters that Mordechai sent to the Jews later on, which described all the events, it says he sent out letters. This is late in the Megillah. You know what the letter was? It was the Megillah.
Oh.
Rashi says it also. The letter that he sent out about the whole story was the actual Megillah's Esther that we read. So this is the Ibn Ezra's idea here. It says he knew that this document was going to be accessible to everybody, because he's sending it out to the whole kingdom. And it was well known that if you would write a document and you would put the name of your God in that document, that whoever was in charge of the country would substitute the name of their God. So Mordechai did not want to write Hashem's name in the Megillah, because he knew they would change it to some Persian deity and reflect what they want to reflect. So therefore, in protection of the holiness of God's name, he didn't write it into the Megillah. A fascinating thought from the Ibn Ezra.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes, please.
There's also a book in English that's been out for a little while, which is based on B'nai Yisachar. It's, I believe the gentleman's name is Ruskin. I think is his name. Mm-hmm. It's been a little while.
Okay.
And it is. It has the words Rosh Chodesh in the title.
Okay.
But in it's a great book. I've worked through it and taught it and all. But one of the concepts that he has there is that sometimes the mazel of a month is something that a Jewish person is supposed to overcome. Similar to the idea in the Talmud that Avraham Avinu and Sarai Menu were not to have children, and this had something to do with their mazel. And yet, of course, with Hashem, we can always overcome the mazel.
Right.
But at the beginning of this book, in talking about Tishri, for example, he says, for sure, it is the task of the Jewish people to overcome the mazel. On the other hand, certain months seem instead to be more like this, in that there's a mazel there, but it needs to be accessed, in a sense, mm-hmm. to use that word, mm-hmm. if I may. So, even though it's recorded in the Megillah that the Jewish people cabal, take on the Torah, mm-hmm. in a way that perhaps they had not before. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so firmly now, some mm-hmm. would say that means in terms of the oral Torah, they accepted everything
right.
now, no question,
right.
now on a certain level for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not recorded that that happened in the month of Adar, I don't believe. But anyway, I was just wondering if that was the way it was for them, that it was possible that they could get to this quality of the mazel. And then, of course, further, which months are the ones we have to overcome, which are the ones that we don't, and so on.
It's really both, that there are certain qualities of the mazel that have to do with what we call the ma'areches ha'shamayim, that's more the order of nature. Mm-hmm. And the order of nature is something that the Jewish people have the ability to rise above. And that's any mazel. Then there's also higher qualities in that very same month, which are related to that teva, that natural quality of nature, but really above it. So in every month, we have to overcome, strive to overcome whatever is the fixed nature part of that month,
mm-hmm.
and to rise to the higher level, the higher domain of that relationship to that mazel. That's the basic idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like some months we overcome and some months we don't. Both principles
mm-hmm.
apply
mm-hmm.
all the way through.
I really appreciate your going in depth in his whole chapter here, because the person that I mentioned, of course, is just taking a couple of ideas,
excerpts,
here,
ideas
here
sure,
or there.
Right, right.
And that's why now I appreciate your saying that,
sure.
because I didn't get that from the book,
mm-hmm.
because it's not, it's just
right.
here and there.
Right.
Yes,
that's what happens
so
with
much, Rabbi.
Anthologies. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, do you have a question? Yeah, please.
It's
sure.
kind of like a more meta question.
Yeah, please.
A specific question.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this represent Hasidut, like Torah Hasidut, as opposed to what a Misnagid would, what could a Misnagid write? Theoretically say the same thing? Or
most definitely.
Does this
yeah.
represent like a certain like...
No, a Misnagid who is, you know, let's say, you know, well-versed in Sifrei Kabbalah, Kisvei HaArizal, many Misnagdim were and are, could write this type of mimer, right? In that respect, you know, you could say it's not unique to Hasidus, this particular mimer. But he draws on the Kisvei HaArizal, he talks about being above the chet of Adam and Chava, which are ideas that filter a lot into Hasidus,
mm-hmm.
but not unique to Hasidus.
So would a Misnagid reading this at that time be...
offended?
Yeah.
I don't think so. This would not have the ideas that would, you know, be provocative to a true Misnagid. To me, I don't see anything in this
mm-hmm.
that would, in any respect, bring that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, my son went to visit him when he was there. My son was learning Yeshiva for several years there. And he told over to my son two Divrei Torah. And I forgot what they were, so please forgive me.
Yeah.
And one of them sounded very Hasidic, and the other one sounded very Misnagdic. So he said, guess who said this one, the Balatanya, and guess who said this one, Reb Chaim of Volozhin, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the great student of the Gaon of Vilna.
Right.
So everybody always says, well, the Balatanya said this, and Reb Chaim Volozhiner said that. So he says, no, just the other way around. The Balatanya said that one, which you thought was Misnagdic, Reb Chaim Volozhiner said this one, which you thought was Hasidic. And he did that to the boys to try and show them, you know, It's not always that this is this way and this is that way. And same thing with your question, Neil, that it seems to me this is not uniquely Hasidic in its nature.
I mean...
Yeah, please.
One part that is Hasidic,
mm-hmm.
that is Hasidic is that the source comes from Kabbalah. So
that's not Hasidic. No. That's not Hasidic.
My understanding of Hasidus,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
but what I was exposed to
yeah.
is that, and you can correct
please.
Me,
yeah.
That you have the book from not Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
The
Zohar.
The Zohar.
Yeah.
Which is very, you can understanding. Then from the Zohar, you have the Kabbalistic that try to put, you know, explain it in simpler terms to be more understood. And the next step is the Hasidus taking the Kabbalah and trying to, I wouldn't say dilute, but trying to make the ideas of the Kabbalah more understandable to the to the common that we are, like you explaining tonight. I'm sure that in the Zohar, the sense of smell and all this would be explained into metaphor.
Things that we could probably not understand,
I
right?
I mean, yeah, very, very coded.
Okay.
So they decode each time and filter it so that we can understand it. So Hasidus is very much related to Kabbalah and the Zohar, as opposed to the Talmud, it's
Let me jump in now.
That's how I understand it.
I'll jump in to straighten it out a little bit.
That's why I feel it is Hasidus.
It is Hasidus, but what I'm saying is this: it's not uniquely Hasidic. So, for example, the Zohar, which is the primary source of Kabbalah, the writings of the Arizal, another primary source of Kabbalah, the great Misnagdim, the Gaon of Vilna, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who we mentioned, they were completely well-versed in Kabbalah. The Gaon of Vilna was a tremendous Kabbalist, one of the greatest Kabbalists that we've ever had. And so were his students. So it's not accurate to say that the Hasidim draw on Kabbalah and the Misnagdim don't. It's simply not true. If you learn the writings of the Gaon of Vilna and his teachings, they draw intensively on Kabbalah. Now, the Hasidim in practice, more of Kabbalistic ideas are in Hasidic customs. That's true. And perhaps it's even more so part of the language of their Sforim, of their books. That's also true. But what is not accurate is to say that drawing on Kabbalistic ideas is Hasidic only, because it's not. It's really across the board, Ashkenazic, Sephardic, Hasidic, Misnagdic. They were all great students of Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. All of them. Yeah.
Right, but the Misnagdim reserved this type of study to their elite. The Hasidim are channeling those ideas to
only to an extent. I understand what you're saying, it's an important point. Only to an extent. Because it's only some ideas from the works of Kabbalah that the great Hasidic masters and rabbis, that they brought more so into, you know, the larger numbers of people. Only some. And the Hasidic rabbis were also very guarded when it came to deep secrets of the Torah, and they weren't going to write about them or talk about them. So only certain parts of the Kabbalah did they see fit to bring into the society, the Torah society at large. So it's not quite as black and white as that. A little more so than the Misnagdim, but they guarded the secrets of the Torah very, very well. That's just constant in Yiddishkeit, that they have the duty to do that. Yeah. Okay, there's subtleties. Okay, have a great week, everybody. And a Freilich and Purim. Nice to see you.
You
too.
We'll see you next Monday.
It's Rosh Hashem, yeah.
Wonderful.
I'll be sober.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Cheryl.
Cheryl. Nice to see you. Do you live here, Cheryl?
Every month, Jews are to overcome the natural, the model of nature.
That's really nice.